Monster Movie Media presents.
Welcome to episode 43 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II, back again with another fun-filled episode of Creepy Kingdom. Coming up in this episode, I once again will be joined by Philip Swift, the director of the upcoming documentary, The Dark Side of Disney. And I'll be joined by him and his crew live from the filming of The Dark Side of Disney, which was taking place in Walt Disney World this past September?
Yep.
It was late September. It might have been October. Oh, it was all September. Anyways, that's coming up. And that's... Before we jump to that, I have a very special announcement. I'm very excited to announce to you right now. It's that Creepy Kingdom is teaming up with TeePublic.com. TeePublic is a website that sells shirts by independent t-shirt designers, and we're teaming up to give away one of those shirts to you, Creepy Kingdom listeners. What shirt are we giving away? We are giving away an amazing shirt. I posted a picture of this shirt on the website in the past. It is a shirt that has Sally from Nightmare Before Christmas looking like it's in the Starbucks logo instead of the mermaid. And instead of saying Starbucks, it says Deadly Nightshade. It's pretty freaking awesome. When I posted it, it kind of got a lot of attention and likes. Everyone loves it. So TeePublic Creepy Kingdom got together and said, if everyone loves it so much, why don't we give one away? So here's how you enter the contest. All you have to do, you have to go to TeePublic's Facebook page. That's facebook.com/TeePublic. That's TeePublic.com. Now, you write out the words .com to find them on Facebook. You have to like their page. Then you have to like and comment on Creepy Kingdom's Facebook page and just comment saying you want the shirt or something about the shirt so we know. And that's it. You're entered in the contest. The contest ends November 20th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, like TeePublic's page. Like Creepy Kingdom's page, leave a comment on Creepy Kingdom's page, and you could win this incredible t-shirt. But without any further ado, let's begin. All right, everybody, I am live on location at the Dolphin at Walt Disney World, and I'm catching up with the crew of the Dark Side of Disney documentary. So why don't you gentlemen introduce yourselves?
Yeah. Hi, James. I'm Philip Swift. I've been on the podcast before. I'm the director of the Dark Side of Disney documentary.
My name is Zach, and this is my first time at Disney, and I'm shooting some footage for Philip's documentary.
Very nice.
We're still working out. I think we're going to say they're both cinematographers. I don't know. We'll see what Joe has
shooting
to say.
Some footage.
I'm the head cinematographer, Joe Spitt. www.joespitt.org.
You can plug your stuff at the end. You're jumping right into your plugs.
The director of photography for The Dark Side of Disney.
None of the guidebooks that I bought had anything to do with how I wanted to experience Walt Disney World. So I was just searching for a guidebook that would be, relevant to my vacation. And it wasn't out there.
When I read the book, I was like, this book was written for people like me. It was written for people who go to Disneyland all the time and love it, but aren't exactly, the take your four kids once a year family trip to Disneyland type of people.
It's great to know you're obsessed about something, but know that there's other people who are also obsessed about it.
He just jumped out, and there he was. It was like watching Neil Armstrong climb out of the capsule and stand there. And there's Chief. All of a sudden, he's in the scene.
Myself and two other people will be going into the park and figuring out if we can achieve the things that Leonard sent out in his book.
Yeah, if I go into labor, you have to come home immediately. So, there's that.
So, in case the listeners haven't heard you come on and talk about the Dark Side of Disney documentary, why don't you give your elevator pitch here?
Yeah, this is Philip again. I made a documentary in 2011 called The Bubble, which is a documentary about Celebration Florida, mm-hmm. which Joe Spitt was the director of cinematography on. Very director nice. Of photography? Cinematographer? You want to take both credits? Okay, good. All right. We were here for 10 days together, and we came back again for a full week, so apparently he's an okay guy.
Deal with him for that long.
Right. Definitely. No, he's a good guy. So the second time around, that film is done and out there on Amazon for people to check out. But now we are back again with our friend and colleague, Zach Lennon-Simon. Can I use your last name? I just did. To adapt Leonard Kinsey's best-selling travel guide, The Dark Side of Disney.
Okay, and the adaptation. What is your adaptation of the book?
So, I think the easiest way to think about it is that it's sort of a 70-30 split, where 30% of it is really looking at the book and seeing if, sort of investigating the book and seeing if we can achieve what Leonard set out in it.
Right.
The rest of it, the other 70%, is sort of an examination of people who have taken their Disney obsession to the next level.
Okay.
Like, beyond, just fans. That's why in the film, one of the people that you're introduced to, if you go to the Kickstarter page or the website that's out now, is you get to see an excerpt with my mom, who is just a crazy Disney fan.
Right.
It's kind of amazing to me, the lengths to which her obsession goes. And so what I've really enjoyed about making the film is it hasn't been just looking at the book, because the book is a great book and it tells you how to do these things.
Right.
But anyone could just take their iPhone and go into the park and shoot themselves smoking a joint or hitting a vaporizer on Space Mountain.
Right.
That's fine. It takes 2 seconds and you're done with it. So it became less about the how and more about the why.
Right. You're digging a little deeper than a little below the surface to find out why this is happening.
Yeah, that's our goal.
Hopefully. Cool.
Yeah.
So, before we get to what you've been up to here, you did go out to Disneyland, California. Why don't you talk about a little bit some of the things you're doing out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in Disneyland last month, and I, thanks to you, James, actually,
yes.
I got to meet up with one of the social clubs out there, the Bangarang Bunch, which was awesome because they're one of the only they were one of the only groups that has a special females, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for, counterpart? Or not even counterpart.
Well, they section them off. Yeah, they have just a male, female.
Right, they have the ladies' side, and they have the men's.
Right,
so Bangarang Bunch is one whole group, and then there's the split into the Pinup Pixies, which is all women, and then the Hooks Hooligans, which is all the boys. And I got to hang out with them at Disneyland. We did a great interview with the leader of that group. And then I learned so much about the social clubs, which you're not allowed to call gangs. Don't call them gangs.
No, they're not gangs.
And I got to go there and hang out with them and do some interviews and just kind of have a great day with them. I was really impressed with what they had to offer as far as the gang was concerned. Yeah,
that's cool. And just to, you know, special shout out plug, you did interview Roxy Tart, who is a fellow podcaster on Monster Movie Media.
Yeah. She's great. We had a great time. We had a really good time. There was funny, like, what was funny is that I think I went in looking at it from this dark side of Disney perspective. And so I wanted to, like, think immediately, and because of the stuff I'd read on, like, Vice and stuff.
Yeah, that Vice was like a smear campaign.
Yeah, it's like they're really like, you know, who are these gangs in Disneyland? But when you actually talk to these people, they're all people that just want to experience Disney from a different perspective, which falls in line with the dark side of Disney idea more in the Leonard Kinsey avenue than the Vice magazine or, you know, avenue wants to paint it. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah. I think not to talk about social clubs forever, I think it's just the... Did they take on the biker look is what really throws people off, and they don't know what to do with it, and that's why they get uncomfortable. I mean, I haven't experienced that myself yet, so I can't really comment on being in Disneyland with social clubs because it's a pretty new phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting not how much it's not happening here in Disney World. Like, you'll see some people, and by like following like certain hashtags on Instagram or something, you'll start to see that there is like a little underbelly of like connectivity going on.
Sure,
more so than I at first was aware of, but it's not nearly as much as it is on the West Coast.
Yeah, I think because out here in Walt Disney World, out here because that's where we are. You know, it's just more tourist, and Disneyland's more locals, and I think that's what really, you know, determines that.
Sure. So yeah, that was a great trip. We got a great trip. I actually dipped out, like, we filmed interviews the one, it was like a Friday night, I think, and then Saturday during the day. We had plans to kind of hang out all day, but then I went with my friends who had never been to Disneyland, friends that live out in L.A., and halfway through, like, hanging out with the Bangarang Bunch, I just kind of like ejected. I was like, you know what? I'm good. Like, I was waiting for them to like start drinking blood or like,
oh yeah, you realize nothing bad was going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And their story was so great. And so like almost like this great idea of just looking at the park from an adult perspective. And I feel like I had captured that. I like looked under the rock and it was just a nice little, like, you know, clean garden. It wasn't like bugs eating each other to death. And I think it's going to come across in the film. But the cool thing then that happened is that I decided to step away and go hang out with my friends who had never been to the park. They were out there doing their own thing. And so I met up with them. We spent the rest of the day together. And it's been really fun to, you know, I've been going to the parks for 34 years now.
Sure.
And I'm kind of bored of them. You know, I've seen it all. But to be able to go to Disneyland for only actually my second time, but to go with people who had never been to a Disney park, I got to see it fresh. Which is really funny because they had a blast. They had a really good time. They were really into it. My one friend, for some reason, he loves Cars. That's like his favorite Disney film, old Pixar film.
And he never went to Disneyland and lives in L.A.?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And he also loves Cars, which is a movie.
Yeah. Like, wait, you meant he loves automobiles at first.
No. He loves the movie Cars.
He loves the movie Cars.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bad movie. Especially compared to all the other Pixar films. But he literally had like a meltdown. His mind couldn't like process the fact that he was in like the world of Cars.
Oh yeah.
Like, and it was impressive to watch this adult. It was impressive to watch this adult kind of have this like breakdown. Like that, which has been really interesting because now that we're here in Disney World, Zach hasn't been to the park ever before, and he is kind of having the opposite reaction. He's kind of like super underwhelmed by
Really. Were you expecting it to be just the most incredible, amazing thing you've ever seen in your life?
Yeah. I mean,
well, you need some stimulants for that, I guess.
Well, I mean, everything everyone has been saying to me has been like, Disney World's gonna blow your mind. Like, you're gonna come here, you're gonna find dreams, you're gonna be inspired.
Somebody told you're gonna find dreams.
Several different people, several different people have told me, have amped it up to the level where I was like, all right, something really cool, magical, and awesome is gonna happen here.
Right.
And I feel bad in that I haven't had that experience yet. I have enjoyed a few of the rides. They did like touch back into my childhood memories of like, oh yeah, the Muppets today.
Yeah,
I was like,
Muppets
all right,
3D is a great,
Kermit's doing the thing he does, Gonzo's being silly and, you know, otherworldly, but I don't know, I for a place that people constantly keep coming back to over and over again, I was kind of expecting more than I got.
Hmm.
Which that might just be me.
I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday when you mentioned it. I feel that it's hard for maybe an adult for the first time to go into this, because a lot of this definitely taps into childhood. You know, that's, you know, I know that's where it starts with with me. Mm. I mean, and not that I love all the same stuff I did when I was a kid, but experiencing this environment as a child left an impression on me that will never go away, you know, like, and I think that's common amongst a lot of Disney fans. There are adults that for some reason come here and they're all about it. And, you know, some shenanigans out there. but you know, that's that. And another thing, you just might not be into it. I don't know.
It could be that. I mean, I think today when I was kind of like doing more people watching, I'm serious. I was trying to figure it out. Like, this is the greatest mystery of all time. I was like, what is it everyone's getting I'm not getting from this place? And I kept watching families and was like checking them out and checking out their kids and things like that. And some of the families were like legitimately into it. Some of the like kids were like, were those real Muppets?
Right.
Were those the real Muppets? And mom's like, yeah, it is. And that's fine to lie to your kids sometimes, I guess.
Well, it's Santa Claus lies. It's totally fine.
Yeah, Santa Claus lies. It's fine. But then some of them were really putting on that forced smile. You know when you like go to some family reunion or some family event and you're just like, hi, Aunt Mabel, how are you? And you just have that like smile just like plastered on your face, because maybe you want to pretend that this is okay, or maybe you're remembering a time where Aunt Mabel was cool.
Right, but Aunt Mabel's
long since passed the era of cool, and now you're just still with her, and you just keep visiting Aunt Mabel. I feel like my best analogy for Disney World is that it's a giant forced smile at a family reunion.
Hmm. Wow. You stunned me on that one.
But that could also just be me.
It could be. I think also, and I can point this out too, a little bit of a difference between like the average Disney fan and the subjects of the documentary, perhaps, is that most people think of the people that you're talking about when you about being Disney fans. And the thing is, Disney is just as vague as anything. Like, there's not one thing that is Disney. So many people get so many different things out of the brand Disney, not just let alone the theme parks. So that's, and I think that's definitely what I explore on this show, you know, that this is a different perspective that's not really viewed. And it's what I assume is kind of what you guys are doing with the documentary, based on what you've described.
I'm not the spokesperson.
Right.
For anything. I'm just the guy in the corner being like, I don't get it.
Right, I know. But as a case study, it's very interesting, your perspective.
Part of it is, I think, also that you, for some reason, on Wednesday, we did some stuff that I probably shouldn't talk about yet, but on Wednesday I did some stuff that I had to go away and do with someone else, who, it all, when you, if you see the movie, this is like a secret little, like, check out the movie next year to see what I'm talking about. But so while I went off for this one person to do some things, I left Zach's first time in the Magic Kingdom in the great hands of Joe, who I think came to it with maybe a mildly negative approach just to begin with. Maybe Joe, do you have any?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've come to Disney when I was a kid. It wasn't ever really my favorite. The parks or the cartoons weren't really that great. I forgot that 20,000 Leagues was
that was
Disney, and that
ride.
I liked a lot. And to which I found out isn't there anymore.
No more. Bye bye.
So the one thing I loved, which I thought was going on a real submarine and seeing squid,
sure,
like every boy wants to see, when they were a kid. Was it, but that wasn't there. So, but I mean, I feel like I was a pretty good tour guide. I said where everything was at. I just didn't. I think I was like, you know, just as good as a bad Disney tour guide, because they get paid for it. You know, they show up every day.
Yeah. It's one thing to be like, well, there's that ride, but they're not actually riding.
You know what I mean? Like, there's one thing to say, like, oh, look over there. There's like, you know, Big Thunder Mountain, and then you keep walking and you don't get on the ride.
So, you literally gave a tour but didn't do anything.
Right.
Space Mountain. We went on Space Mountain, but, you know, that was said to be 45. Yeah, also, I remember that being a lot brighter when I was a kid, like laser lights or something flying. Granted, you know, I had a light in my face, so it was hard to see, and sunglasses on, because the light was too bright.
You were wearing sunglasses in Space Mountain?
It was true.
Wow. It's already way too dark. You were so it pretty much was equivalent of just having your eyes closed, I guess, the whole time.
Yeah, and it was having my eyes closed, it was a lot darker than I remembered.
Okay.
So all in all, I can say that the documentary is going pretty well, because I brought one person who doesn't really care and one person who just doesn't get it.
Well, you know, I think that's cool, actually. I think since you guys aren't like deep in it, you can actually be objective about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the way to go. I think it'd be really hard. I think it'd be hard for me to do what you guys are doing, because I'm just too involved in it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be my perspective. Even as hard as I try to not have it be that, it would just still be my perspective.
So. Well, it's been really nice. And we actually never really like even talked about this before coming out and making this movie. But what's been interesting about it is that this is the first project I've ever worked on. Like when Joe and I did The Bubble, that was like the biggest thing I'd ever done as far as like a film was concerned. And it was like the two of us together, kind of like back to back, like shooting everything, like constantly, like every second of the day we were interviewing or shooting B-roll or going around, and it was just the two of us.
Right.
And so by bringing Zach on board for this one, it's been kind of weird on some level for me, because I've kind of just taken what I think of as a more like true like director's like stance, and like they film and I'm like not doing
anything. So you're not filming, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm like walking into the park and I have like nothing. I'm not like carrying like a mic and a camera and like all this stuff. I'm just like walking in while they have like shoulder mounts and like mics and stuff. And it's been kind of one level I'm like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like, I guess. Like
right,
documentary
yeah.
production, like, you know, Morgan Spurlock or Michael Moore isn't like filming those movies.
Right,
they're just there like telling people what to do. So on one level I feel bad. I'm like, well, I should be doing more, I guess. But like, but I'm filming and organizing footage and directing the where to go and stuff, right? I'm doing an okay job is what I'm saying. I'm okay. I'm doing okay, right?
You guys, you're doing just fine. You're doing just fine. Cool. So now that you're here, you've been here for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
What have you guys been up to?
We've been up to anything and everything. if anyone's read and nothing at all. So, yeah, yesterday we didn't really do much. We went out for your meetup that you had here.
Creepy Fast Pass meetup. Yes.
And that was kind of all. Well, we checked in here yesterday. We checked out of one hotel, checked into this hotel. It started Monday. We came in and we checked into the suite, and then did the number one like Darksider tip, which is go to the grocery store you check into your hotel.
That's exactly what I did. That's what you do,
right? So yeah. So instead of spending all your money on like you know park food, you can stock up on you know whatever you want. You can get everything cheaper, from food to beer to whatever.
Sure.
Much cheaper that way. So that was the first day. And then Tuesday, we went into the Magic. No, what was Monday? My days are all jacked up.
It's all big blood.
Monday was that. Tuesday was. Tuesday was Hoot. Yeah, so on Tuesday, we hung out with Hoot Gibson, who, if you know your listeners don't know Hoot, they should look him up, because he is a true like Disney Darksider legend. He's amazing. And he lived up to everything. Have you ever been to the Pirate's Cove Adventure Golf?
No.
You know where it is on 192?
I see. Oh, wait. Is that the one you see off the highway?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I didn't know this, and I've known about that place forever. I remember like always being like when I was a kid, saying to my mom like, "Oh, we should go to that place, that adventure golf." And she's like,
"You're like you're right near your Disney World." Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm trying to keep it clean.
Yeah.
She was like, "Forget you."
Your mom cursed at you.
Yeah, no, she didn't say that. But she was like, "No, like we're here to go to Disney, not here to go to that place."
Yeah.
But over the last like you know 10, 15 years, however long it's been, I forget exact. But Hoot Gibson. Amazing Disney adventurer. He's known because he got a job as a custodian like right out of high school here at the Disney parks in the 90s, and then proceeded to ride what he called the magic carpet of vomit everywhere in the park, and like started filming everything he could behind the scenes, and like documented everything. When his He had met this guy named who goes under the pseudonym of Chief, and so Hoot and Chief would go everywhere and like document everything in the park, especially the most famously Horizons, which is this, you know, now defunct ride at Epcot. That ride, like, people have such a nostalgia for that, and part of it is that those nostalgic fires are still burning because of the extensive like documentation that Hoot and Chief have done of that ride.
Right, right.
And so what's cool about Pirates Cove Adventure Golf is that Hoot, in the last, I think it's been at least 10 years, if not longer, has gone to that, has been working for that park to create more of like a experience when you go miniature golfing there.
Okay.
So everything you see from like the pirate ship to like the gangplank to like the rocks and the walls and the skulls, Hoot made that himself.
Really?
He's made that. There's even like animatronics and stuff.
Oh, cool.
That he's made full on from scratch. And what blew me away about this is stuff I didn't realize, just by hanging out with him, realized it, is that like I taught myself kind of how to make movies when I was like, when I was a teenager. When I was like 13 years old, I started making movies. I just burped. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
You can leave that in.
Yeah.
I started making movies myself, and part of that was like, you know, watching movies and like making movies with my friends and like reading books about filmmaking and reading scripts and doing all this stuff. And I didn't go to film school until, you know, what, 13 years after that. So when I was 26, I finally went to film school. And by the time I got there, I felt like I knew kind of almost everything they wanted to teach me, which is kind of a, you know, pretentious way to look at it. But besides like the software of like Final Cut and all that,
sure,
I knew how to make a movie. And what's so amazing is that that's the same way Hoot was. Like, Hoot knew how to like make an animatronic like robot figurine that could talk and move whenever, just by like devouring every bit of information he could find about like Disney and Disney World. And it's amazing that he does that, and now it's like a thing he actually gets paid for. Like, it's super cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
So that was Tuesday. We hung out with Hoot.
Nice,
great guy. He drove us around and after the golf park, and drove us to the basically the Disney like engineering facility where they do repairs on like all of the ride vehicles and stuff.
Okay, is that on property?
It's on property, but you're not allowed to just drive there. But we did,
right.
And we drove around, and you could see like Splash Mountain, like cars being worked on, logs,
cool.
Nice. And a bunch of other stuff. It was pretty cool. That was Tuesday. Basically, it was awesome. It was everything I hoped it would have been. And then Wednesday, I met up with someone who took me on an adventure that I'll talk about some other time.
Okay.
while these guys went and experienced what we just talked about with Zach, you know, being disappointed by the park so much. Did we do anything that night? Then we went to see Tusk.
Oh, nice.
Kevin Smith's new film, yes. Tusk. If talk about creepy, that's right. Definitely. It was great. Thursday, we picked up The Raptor, as we'll call him.
Okay.
He is another guy who's got a pseudonym. We picked him up as he drove up on the Greyhound bus from 2 hours south. And he joined us as we drank around the world, which we did. We achieved it. Zach and I had
11 really?
Drinks in all countries.
Holy cow.
In under 4 hours. It ends
4 hours
with me crying in Canada, like literally sitting on a bench, like sobbing in my wife and I are expecting our first child, and she got a blanket that someone had made for the baby. She had got in the mail and sent me a text of it, like as I was drinking this 11th beer.
Oh, wow.
And so, and it's all on camera. Like, Joe was filming it, like, while I get the text.
Oh, you
and like,
see
I'm
that?
Looking at it and like, just overwhelmed with like emotion, and I, on top of 11 drinks,
right.
Like, am kind of out of my mind at that point.
You're like, there will be a human who will own this blanket very soon.
Exactly, you get it. Yeah, it was like a real like, emotional thing.
Yeah.
And that's how Wednesday ended, or Thursday.
That was Thursday. Yeah.
It was Thursday. Yeah. GC, my brain is wiped. And then Friday was a recovery day, but we came out to your podcast meetup, which is great. And then here we are. Saturday, we went to Dapper Days with the Raptor, and we're going to go check out Christopher Cross with him at about 5:30 at Epcot. So if this is going out live, which I know it isn't.
This definitely is not. But
you can meet us for Christopher Cross. And then Sunday, we have a secret thing up our sleeve that I don't even want to talk about right now, but it's secret and fun.
Oh,
then we're going to try to sell our tickets. We have 1 day left on our ticket that we actually didn't use because of our recovery day after drinking around the world.
That's prohibited.
Right, but they sell the booths, so right. It's prohibited. It's prohibited, but there's all these booths around Kissimmee that are like, we'll buy your tickets. And
they'll buy them. Well, the thing is, you can't get in the parks because they scan your finger.
Exactly, but That's they still say they'll buy your tickets for $20. They'll say they'll give you if you have a day left, they'll give you $20 per day on your tickets. I don't know. Maybe they're going to cut off my finger or something. I don't know what they're going to do. But we're going to find out because we're going to go. The idea is that, and I haven't even talked to you guys about this, but the idea is that like I'll wear a mic and we'll park right outside.
Yo, dude, that is going to be some real investigative.
So I'm
going to
wear like a wireless mic and I'm going to go inside and they're going to film from like the car outside.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And you'll be able to hear the audio of me being like, I want to sell these, I have these three passes.
Yeah, then the police will be right there. And
I guess, but like I'm like, what? Yeah, there's no what, there's nothing at that point. Like they're the ones doing the illegal.
Yeah, you're right.
That's been the fun thing about all this, too, is that it's not like we are doing some things we probably shouldn't be doing in Disney parks, but at the same time, often a couple things I learned is, one, if you just act like you're supposed to be there, no one cares. You know what I mean?
What's an example of that you when you did that?
Well, if you're in an area that you shouldn't be, but you look like you're supposed to be there, you can just nod and say hi and say, oh, hey. Like the hotel, which, like, what?
Well, when we one of the other Darksider tricks, we parked right at a hotel, so we were going to have lunch with, like, an old friend.
Yeah.
And then we just tried to jump on the monorail to go over to, what was it, Magic Kingdom?
Parked at the Poly.
So, yeah, you can do this at Contemporary, you can do it at Polynesian, you can say, I'm here for lunch, I'm meeting my grandmother, or whatever. You don't have this, you have minimal information. Like,
right.
I'm here to have lunch. And they're like, okay, go on in. And you go in, and you hop on the monorail, and you go to the park, and then 10 hours later, you come back, and you get in your car. And it's a different guard, no one cares. The thing we learned today, or yesterday, about at the Dolphin here, the Dolphin is on Disney property, but isn't actually owned by Disney anymore. So they're a little lax on a couple things, one of which is an actual like guard gate. So there, when you go roll up to the Contemporary or the Polynesian, there's a gate where they want to check your ID and all this stuff. But at the Dolphin, there isn't such a thing. So you can just roll up and park in self-parking, and no one knows. Like, we were checked in. We are guests of this hotel.
Right.
But they don't know what kind of car I'm driving. They didn't check the plates or anything like that. So anyone could roll in, self-park, and then get on the boat or walk over to Epcot.
Wow, and we're talking about evading parking so much because it's really expensive here.
Yeah, but it's like $17 a day. Or
Yeah. So
it's a lot. It's like breakfast and lunch.
I mean, and when when you're here for a while, it adds up for sure.
James, can I ask you a question?
You may.
Oh, really?
You can ask me all the questions that you want.
why do you podcast? Is that too vague a question?
Why do I podcast in general?
Yeah, just in general.
It's funny because the answer to that is how I started. Mm-hmm. But are you asking for like a deeper like?
Well, no. I mean, maybe not as such an existential reason. Like, why do we do anything?
Yeah.
Why do we breathe? What is the meaning of life? I don't know. What got you into podcasting? I guess originally would be a better question.
Well, you brought up Kevin Smith before. Mm-hmm. When he first started doing his podcast.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah. Going on behind me?
Yeah, there was something in the background.
Oh.
All right, go ahead. So Kevin Smith.
When he started doing his podcast, Smodcast, in 2007, is something when that started. I'm a lifelong Kevin Smith fan, but I would say around then I was like deep in the Kevin Smith game. I had just met him like at an in-store. Like I was like super fan at that point. And so I had the podcast and I was just like, oh, this is great. I really love listening to these guys just like talk off the cuff and just get all these like kind of inside information about what they're doing in their lives. And when I was in college, I had a college radio show, which was a freeform station, so I was playing music. But me and my friend would she would help me DJ, but we would just go on air and just say the most ridiculous things and have all these random people call that we didn't know. And that was always a rush. And that's kind of where I got my chops, I guess. And so after hearing Kevin's podcast, I was like, oh, I definitely want to do this. Like, and I'm like, I already did it before because I did college radio. I have all the gear because, I've been in bands over the years. So I had all this recording gear and plus I do video work. So I'm like, I have everything here to do it, you know? So I started a podcast maybe a month after Smodcast. It's called The Even James Has a Podcast, which was ironic because there wasn't that many podcasts at the time as opposed to there is now, but I was just, I kept hearing all these, everyone has a podcast, so I was just like...
Right, well, yeah, it seems a little forward thinking, because now literally everybody has a podcast, but then at the time, 7 years ago?
Yeah.
That's funny.
So And that's been it's just something I do off and on. It's very off the cuff. It's been me and different friends as co-host over the years. Right now, my co-host is my friend Allison, my friend of 20 years, and it's uncensored. It's just rambling, having fun, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But and about 2009, 2010, I had discovered Disney podcasts, and I just like I was kind of alone in my. In my circle of friends, in my Disney fandom, like I have a few that like you know like to go to the park sometimes, and they enjoy it, but they're not really thinking about it like when they're at home. And I would go on these like late night like information searches on the internet. I would just be like Google, like, oh, when did this open? I wonder why they changed that. And I would just keep going to the rabbit hole, no pun intended, of all this information. And I kept coming to these websites that were podcasts. And then, like, and then after a while, I'm like, oh, I should listen to that sometime. And then eventually, I'm like, I should definitely listen to that because I listen to podcasts all the time, and I'm a Disney fan. Like, I was resistant to it for some reason because I didn't think it was for me. I thought it was for the non-Darksiders. And then I started listening, and then I've just been hooked ever since. And so that was like a few years of listening, and then eventually, I'm doing this other podcast, and I didn't see my perspective being represented, you know, that was the thing that was lacking. So, and I wanted to listen to like stuff that focused on like the creepy and the dark and the villains and the evil and the scary stuff of Disney, and it wasn't there. So I was just like, well, that's my angle.
Well, it's interesting. There's a great podcast talking about, because I've been a podcast guy since around the same time, around 2006 or seven, when I moved to New York. I started listening to video game podcasts a lot,
okay.
Like the 1UP Network, like all that, the old stuff they used to do on that. But more recently, I'm really into this new X-Files files. Do you know about this?
No, what's
it's
that?
Great. It's comedian Kumail Nanjiani. He has, he's got a podcast where he is like going back and rewatching the X-Files, and every episode he has a guest on. And,
oh, that's cool.
And there's another comedian, but it's very serious. Like, what's great about it is he takes it very seriously. He's this is the fourth time through he's watched the series, and wow. But what he gets into a lot is about how, and what I really respond to is how. He saw the X-Files first when he was like 12 years old, like living in Pakistan. And it really spoke to him. Like, first of all, he really thought that they're based on these true stories. That, episode was like a true thing.
Oh, wow.
And as you can imagine, like a little kid, definitely you would believe that. But then he also realized at some point that he was like, you know, he really got into the idea that the truth is out there. And it meant a lot to him in a much broader sense than the show places it. Okay. So
sure.
The idea that if these people can go and chase these like, you know, Monster of the Week episode, you know, things they do in X-Files, I, as this like 12-year-old like Pakistani boy, could do anything. I could go to America and do anything. And now he's like he's got several podcasts, but he also is on like every show you can think of, from like Portlandia.
I was gonna say his recurring role on Portlandia is excellent. That's how I really
he's great. And he's on Silicon Valley. He's got his own show on Comedy Central now. And
oh really?
Cool. Yeah,
good for him.
He's great. He's wonderful. But one of the things that he talks about on the show a lot is that. That show, The X-Files, came out around the birth of the internet. Like, it was really like 93,
sure.
94 when the internet first started catching on. And what you started to see at the time was a rare thing. Of course, before The X-Files, there was like Star Trek fans were rabid and crazy, but they didn't have such a platform like the internet to expand their
right, that's where the conventions came
exactly,
from.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, a show like The X-Files comes around and there's a community that starts to come up together because of it. And what the internet lets us do is it allows us these communities that were very tiny little like you know pockets now are all of course connected.
Sure.
Are you? Let me ask you a random question. It's
sure.
not random at all. Are you a religious person?
I am not.
See, and neither am I. Neither I know Kevin Smith isn't. And I know Kumail Nanjiani isn't. But we have our things that fill the need that religion do for
sure,
other people.
Sure. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It could be Disney. It could be, you know, for me in general, I feel like it's just media. Like I have this media addiction.
Yeah.
I'm always like watching TV or watching a movie or listening to a podcast. And if it gets to a point where I'm like, oh God, what am I going to watch? Like, you know,
I'm out of stuff. Yeah.
I have 30 minutes to fill. until, like, you know, before I just got home from work. My wife will be home in an hour. I'm exhausted, but I want to watch, like, one thing. Oh, I got that episode of Doctor Who. Thank God I can watch this 42-minute episode of Doctor Who while I, like, jam this food in my mouth.
Right.
And I feel good. I feel like part of a community for some weird reason.
Sure, sure.
But I think that's what everybody, with podcasts, with Disney, and I don't know, I feel like this is going to be almost sort of the grand thesis of the Dark Side of Disney documentary, is that that's what it's all about, is finding a community that you can tap into, something that speaks to you and allows you to feel like a larger part of the world as a whole. You know what I mean?
A little bit.
Have I gone completely off the rails?
No, you're not completely off the rails. I'm not saying that's what I was looking for.
Right.
It's just, it's what I found.
Right. No, that's great. That's exactly it. You know? Because you don't, we often, the best things that we do find are things we're not looking for. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking for my wife in 2005.
Of course, right.
And I ran into, I'd known her for 10 years, and I ran into it in a bar in Ohio, and I saw her walk in the door, and I literally had known her for a decade. But then I saw her, and, like, it clicked.
It clicked,
like, oh, my
yeah.
God. This is what I have been looking for. I wasn't looking for it at the time, but I found it.
Right, right. So stop looking for stuff, kids. It'll come right to you.
Yeah, and it's also just something that happens with age, too, I think. Like, sure. You get to a point where all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, you know, life is hard, and life is very, you know, there's a lot, you get a lot of curveballs thrown at you, but then every now and then you get that one fastball that you hit at the right time. I just made a baseball analogy.
Oh. It's very exciting for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. I feel like we got off topic because we were talking about your origins.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We did, but it was a good conversation. So there's one thing it's still relevant to what you were saying, though. I was going to bring it up, and it has to do a little bit with my origins here. I thought of the idea of the Creepy Kingdom podcast in probably like May or June of 2011, and I sat on it until December of 2013. And I sat on it because it's like, I don't have time to do this. You know, I run my own business. I work 12 hours a day, you know, and excuses forever. And I reached a point where I felt that I felt like something was missing, because I wasn't at that point. I wasn't even recording my other podcast. I just hadn't been doing any podcasting, and I haven't been doing anything creative. Because, like I said, I was in bands when I was younger. I've done short films. I've done podcasting. These are all creative outlets of mine. And right at that point, I was doing nothing but just working all the time. And I felt a void. And I'm just like, I'm going to start this podcast. I'm going to do it at 11 o'clock until midnight every night. Like, whatever I need to do. Like. I'm not going to be working at that time, so I know that there's no guilt in just getting it done. And that's what I did. And very fast, I realized it was one of the greatest decisions that I've made in my entire life. And I can honestly say that because very fast, people connected to the show. Obviously, I was filling a void that wasn't there. But what was really exciting for me was I got to interact with other people, like other podcasters and other people in the Disney community, as joining them, not as a consumer, but it's like, instead of like, I'm like a part of it now, you know, like, and I really felt that actually when we went at the screening that you had in Baltimore, and when Leonard read from his book. And we afterwards, you know, we were at the bar next door. We were having drinks. Everyone's talking, having a good time. And I'm talking about things that everyone else in my everyday life is just giving me blank looks, or you know, my girlfriend at the time was sick of hearing about it, you know, stuff like that. And I sat there. I'm like, oh my God! Like, because of that decision to start this podcast a few months earlier than that. That wasn't even that long before that point. It was April was the screening. Yeah, I started in December. So we're a few months later. Now I'm having this conversation with these people. Like, some I haven't met before. Some I've read their books. Some I've only heard them on podcasts. And that's when I realized, like, you don't have to sit on the sidelines. You know, like, you can get in there and be a part of it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and what's so powerful about it too is that you're doing something for yourself. Like, it's not even, you're not necessarily talking into this microphone right now for anyone but yourself. And it's a perfectly fine thing. Like, we want to be like, well, maybe I'm a little vain. Maybe it's a little selfish.
No, no.
But it's not. Like, the problem the weird thing that's happening now, like I think in the world because of the internet, is that everybody thinks that they're creative and everybody is
well, it was a weird cat getting spayed back
yeah.
then.
Everybody thinks that they're creative, and what it does is that there used to be a small little pool that everyone got to go swim in, and it was a very elite few that got to go swim in that pool.
Right, right.
There's no longer a pool. It's an entire ocean that everybody's swimming in, and we're all just, like, peeing in this water together, all just like, this water's great. And so if you're going to get in that piss pool, like everybody is, this is the analogy I'm making.
Great
if
analogy.
You're going to get in that piss pool, which we all are doing,
yeah.
then you better do it for yourself. You better do it for no one else but yourself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you can go out and you can make a movie, you can make an album, you can paint a picture, you can do a podcast. But if you're doing it for someone else, then you're gonna fail because everyone's gonna immediately see like, oh, that's phony.
Right.
You
right.
Know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Reddit is gonna be all over your ass in 2 seconds because you know we're shallow. So there's no reason why you can't go out now in the modern world and do exactly what you want to do. And just keep doing it until hopefully it succeeds. If it doesn't succeed, you can still say you did it.
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, I didn't, yeah, I mean, when I did it, when I started the show, I was just, I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't have any, like, real expectations of it. I was just like, I could tell you one thing, though. I wanted to find other people like me. I could tell you that. That was definitely a motivation. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, there's no one else in the world like me. I'm a unique old snowflake, but...
Yeah, definitely are. But you found similar snowflakes.
Your kindergarten teacher wasn't lying.
I know.
Unique as hell.
But no, I've just the idea is it's a lot easier to get to know people when you have something to offer them, like a platform, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being some random person on the internet. And that's been an incredible experience. Just the people I've been able to meet and the experiences that I've been able to have just from just doing this podcast. And mm-hmm. it's not even a year old. And I have so many more ideas and so many things I want to do beyond the podcast with the Creepy Kingdom brand.
Right. This is the third time that we've hung out in a year. And in the past yeah. year, in less than a year,
yeah.
all because of your podcast. Like,
right,
like
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I met you in Baltimore. Was that the first time? Was it
yeah.
Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
And then you came to New York
right.
for the Kickstarter completion
party. Yep.
And now here we are again. Like, and it's awesome. And I look forward to the fourth time and the fifth time.
Right.
And I look forward to the time where I can't remember how many times it's been.
Right.
And we came together because of this weird like Disney connection.
Right.
It's weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was.
Is it creepy though?
Nah, it's not creepy to me, but. It's creepy to Zach. He's kind of creeped out by this. He's
no,
like,
no, that's fine.
He's like, I don't like meeting people on the internet. It's weird. So, yeah, that's my story.
Yeah, that was good. That was great. That was exactly so for your listeners at home.
Yeah.
That was my trick was that I wanted to interview you for the film while we were doing the podcast.
Yeah, this interview is going to be edited, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like the whole thing is this is going to be an
yeah,
hour.
It's a secret. Yeah, it's really just a movie about you doing a podcast. We've been filming you for.
Well, I think I can wait to do this secret footage.
Right, exactly. It's great. It's all just drones. You didn't notice those drones flying around all day filming you. But yeah, definitely. What else? Is this it or should we keep going?
Yeah. Then we can.
Oh, it's 5 o'clock. We got to go see Christopher Cross.
Okay. Well, I'm all out of questions. If you have any more questions,
I think that was great. I think seriously, James, this is awesome. We got to do this, and
yeah.
I look forward to again seeing you infinite amounts of times.
Right,
hopefully
right.
Not that good. Anyways, Zach, do you have any final words?
No, I was going to make a Disney quote, and I realized I don't know any.
If you dream,
that's
it,
a good one.
You can do it.
When you wish upon
hey,
a star.
Hey, we don't have clearance for that.
This
hey.
Is how you should open this, by the way.
All right, so to wrap up for the podcast listeners, how much more shooting do you have to do for the film?
Well, I think hopefully we're going to wrap up in the next 24 hours.
Oh, this is it? This is the end of the shoot?
I hope there's a couple more things I want to film. I'm taking one more trip to Baltimore to do sort of an exit interview with Leonard to kind of check in. I checked in with him before I did the Kickstarter, and I kind of want to check out with him at the end.
Okay.
And there's one more thing I want to do with my mom. Like, I have this whole idea of bookending the film with my mom, like, you know, starting her journey like in like cold wintry Ohio, and
okay.
I filmed a bunch of stuff of her getting up at like 5 a.m. to go to work, and you know, going in the snow and driving and all this stuff. And then I think it would be really interesting to sort of bookend the film with her arriving at the airport here in Orlando, like sunny and like happy.
Right.
You know how it is, that 5 a.m., like, oh, God, I got to go to work, compared to like the I just landed at Orlando.
I just got to.
So those are a couple things I still want to film, but the bulk of it, the meat of it, I'd say we're probably about at 80% or 90% after today.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So when can we see this? What's the time frame?
New baby on the way. November 14th is the drop date on that.
That's when the baby comes out.
Right. That's when the baby comes out. So my goal was to get...
drops.
That's what the baby mixtape drops.
So my goal was to try to get most of the filming done so that I could begin editing in between, you know, interrupted sleep schedules, as we know we'll have.
And you have a full-time job as well?
Yeah, and so I'll be working too. Hopefully summer 2015, maybe we'll start doing some rough cut screenings to get some feedback. But we'll see. I hope.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Definitely. Well, if people want to... follow along.
We have a website now. This is going to be like a world announcement because I've just been sitting on it, right? it's dsoddoc.com. So it's dsoddoc.com, Dark Side of Disney Doc.
Excellent.
Makes sense. So yes. dsoddoc.com for all your updates, or check out my website at dearmothman.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we did it.
All right.
We did a podcast. We filmed an interview. What else can we do before we get out of here?
Go see Christopher Cross at Epcot.
There it is.
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks again to the Dark Side of Disney documentary crew for coming on and talking to us a little bit about that and interviewing me in return. So it's fun for everybody. Again, their website is dsoddoc.com. And of course, you heard a little bit of the trailer in the episode, but the trailer is up at their website as well. Next up here, I got a little, dive into the mailbag here and read and respond to a few emails. This next email comes in from Cherry. James, I'm one of those middle-aged moms who was very tech ignorant and happy to be so. But my kids introduced me to stuff you missed in history class and I was hooked. So I stumbled across the podcast world and subscribed to your podcast completely by accident. What a wonderful accident. I'm up to number 11 and have enjoyed every minute. So thank you, James. Thank you, Cherry. That's awesome. I don't know how you accidentally subscribed to it, but it sounds good to me. So thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. This next email actually came in on our Tumblr page, which I just realized that we get messages there. So it's a little old. So I apologize for not responding to this earlier. But I found it, so I'm going to read it. This one comes in from a young lady referring to herself as Buffles the Enchilada. Hey, I just wanted to let y'all know that I absolutely adore your podcast. I found it a short while ago and have been listening to all the episodes. However, I just want to say I actually do like Stitch's Great Escape. Perhaps not on the level of loving it, but certainly enough that I don't detest it with all the strength I can muster. Can't wait to hear the rest of the episodes you have planned for October and beyond. Buffles the Enchilada. Well, Buffles, again, thanks for writing. I'm glad I found that you wrote in here. And that's another person that has come out in favor of Stitch's Great Escape. You guys are coming out of the woodworks. I'm proud of you. And when we do talk about this attraction, I do want to get some feedback on what it is that you lovers of this attraction love about it so much. But thanks for writing in, and thanks for listening to all the Creepy Days episodes. It's totally awesome. If you would like to contact the show, all you need to do is send me an email at creepykingdom@gmail.com. Before we get out of here, I want to remind you again of our contest. It's just going on this week. So hopefully listening to this in real time. We are teaming up with TeePublic to give away a sweet Sally Deadly Nightshade Starbucks mashup shirt. If you haven't seen this yet, you know, go check the website, check our social media. You'll see it, because I'll be posting about this contest all week, of course. And enter the contest by liking TeePublic's page on Facebook. Of course, that's T-E-E Public, one word. And like and comment on Creepy Kingdom's Facebook page. And comment something about the t-shirt. So I'm well aware that that's why you've entered the contest. And that's all you got to do. The contest ends November 20th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be sure to check out my other podcasts. My long-running original podcast, the Even James Has a Podcast podcast, is available for you to listen to on the internet. You can find that show at the Even James the Podcast podcast.com. And my other show, which has just returned from a three-month hiatus, is Roxy's World, the official podcast of pinup model Roxy Tart, which I am the co-host on the show. We're back with some new episodes. You can find that show at roxy-tart.com. And you're probably going to definitely want to check out the upcoming episodes, as it will be all about Disneyland and we will be intoxicated. So, there's that. And of course, it is the same Roxy Tart, who is officially part of Creepy Kingdom. So you can't get enough of her. Check out her show. For show notes, videos, creepy Disney cosplay, and fan art pics, links to all of our social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Google+, Tumblr, and Pinterest, all you need to do is go to creepykingdom.com. And we are in the iTunes store, where you can rate the show, subscribe, and you can review us. You can leave us a little review, let us know what you think. You could do that. That'd be sweet. And we are on the Stitcher app, an application that streams podcasts directly to your smart telephone and or smart tablet. No downloading required. The files, you have to download the app. Let's get real here. All you need to do to find out more about Stitcher is go to Stitcher.com. Well, and until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It is midnight. Pleasant dreams.